Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The mass shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada revives calls for gun control. The shooting may have generated momentum for new limits on gun modifications like bump stocks, but chances for laws changing how people access guns appear slim. Native Americans and Alaska Natives use guns for subsistence hunting, among other things. Can policies on guns increase safety? What about violating constitutional rights? We want to hear your opinion right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Supreme Court of Canada has ruled that the records detailing the abuse of former Indian residential school survivors can eventually be destroyed. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the issue had set the privacy of individuals against preserving historical records.
Canada's highest court ruled in a unanimous decision that former residential school students will have 15 years to decide if they want to keep their personal stories preserved. The move puts the decision in the hands of those survivors, not government archivists. The court ruling means that the survivors have a right to keep the records private and have them destroyed. Phil Fontaine was at the forefront of the case. He's also a former national chief of the Assembly of First Nations. Fontaine says the ruling was a good one.
It was a very clear statement on the rights of survivors, their consent. It is about their dignity. It is about their respect. And we're not gloating in any by any stretch. We're just very thankful that the Supreme Court of Canada came down on the right side in this case.
Native leaders had argued that not to uphold the rights of residential school survivors would be another breach of trust, in the same way that vulnerable people were abused at the schools when they were children. The government had argued that the records should be preserved to ensure what happened will never be forgotten. For more than 100 years, from the late 1880s, tens of thousands of Indigenous children were forced to attend the residential schools funded by the government and run by churches. Thousands were abused. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In southeast Alaska, an early Tlingit village site listed in the National Register of Historic Places may be returned to its descendants. About 52 acres on Indian Point, owned by the city of Juneau, may be transferred to the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. Jacob Resnick reports.
At the southernmost point of Auk Cape, a rocky outcropping offers sweeping views of Indian Cove and Indian Island. These names give away this area's history.
This is a south-facing waterfront lot with beautiful views of Auk Bay, which is the exact reason that the Native people selected it for their village site so many centuries ago.
Greg Cheney is a lands manager for the city and borough of Juneau. The Cape Southern Tip has been city-owned since the 1960s.
It's very much like finding a wallet that somebody has. You pick it up on the street and you realize, oh, this belongs to somebody. And so then, you know, I think most people would agree the proper thing to do is to return it to the rightful owners.
A former Juneau assemblyman wrote to the assembly last month recommending that the city give Indian Point to the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. Randy Wanamaker penned that letter.
We used to put branches in the water for the herring eggs and dip nets in the water and get the herring out. You know, that was a practice that was going on for thousands of years.
Greg Cheney, the city lands manager, notes this is prime waterfront property, some of the most valuable holdings in the city's portfolio.
So that's why we have to be very careful about transferring it to an organization that's going to look out for the cultural interests of the Occoquan and not, just look at it as a multi-million dollar asset.
In Auk Bay, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Students at the University of New Mexico were among those celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day Monday and raising awareness about Native issues. April Chi is president of the Kiva Club, a chartered Native student group on campus.
One of the biggest things is fracking and oil and protecting our sacred lands and protecting our sacred sites from outside big oil companies. Also, violence against women, that's something that we really are focusing on this semester as well.
Chi and other Kiva Club members say they're also advocating for university administration to enact the Indigenous Peoples Day holiday on campus. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios, by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by AARP. What we do might surprise you, like sponsoring the Alaska Federation of Natives in Anchorage, Alaska, October 19th through the 21st. Information at aarp.org.
Yate, support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The exact amount of how many guns we have in the U.S. is unclear, but the Office of Congressional Research estimated in 2014 that there were more than 300 million. That's roughly one for every person in the country. And the number of manufactured and imported guns continues to increase. Knowing the number of guns doesn't necessarily inform the question of whether more or less guns make us safe from gun violence. But a mass shooting, like what happened in Las Vegas, prompts the public to pressure elected officials for answers, usually in the form of a limit on gun ownership. Tribes recognize the unique nature of gun ownership, and different tribes have different laws. Those laws run the gamut from deferring to state and federal laws to special permits to prohibiting all guns. We won't settle the gun debate today, but we can further the conversation, and we'd like to hear from you. All opinions are welcome. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. And now joining us from Cherokee, North Carolina, is Deborah Holland, and she is a candidate for Congressional District 1 in New Mexico. She's from Laguna Pueblo. It's our pleasure to have her back. Deb, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Taryn. Always happy to be here with you.
And Deb, of course, our thoughts go out to those who are still facing what happened in Las Vegas and grieving loved ones and just processing all of this. So definitely our thoughts do go out to those folks. Deb, is there anything you want to start with? Any words?
Well, yes, of course. Every time this happens, you know, it renews our resolve to find solutions to having these types of guns in the hands of people that shouldn't have them. And I think it's incumbent on our political leaders to take action on it. We thought when, you know, we had a mass shooting at the elementary school several years back that would do it. And so, you know, you can't go to a school, you can't go to a music festival, you can't go to a nightclub without the fear of being gunned down. So so I hope that this is a tipping point where we actually demand that something be done.
And Deb, a lot of times that's exactly what people do. They turn to their leadership, they turn to Congress, and many times they speak. It's time to pass new laws. It's time to pass new restrictions. Deb, tell me a little bit about where this fits into all of this. More laws,
sure.
More restrictions.
Well, and I don't even know if it's more laws per se, but one thing I think needs to happen is we need 100% background checks and to close the loopholes on those. I think that would help to make sure that people who shouldn't have guns don't have them. I also don't think that military-grade weapons belong in the hands of you know, general citizen of our country. And recently this bump stock was in the news on how it turns a semi-automatic rifle into an automatic rifle. I would like to see that people find ways around things, right? Those bump stocks need to be completely banned. And we need major funding for behavioral health in our country. We don't spend enough money on helping people to find ways to resolve their issues. So those are some of the things I think recently in the news also is talking about how the NRA funds a lot of candidates and a lot of elected officials who are making the laws. And so I think that, you know, as a candidate, I would never accept NRA contributions. I'll just say that here on the air because I don't want to be persuaded by anyone to do what's right for our people and our community.
And Deb, often when we get into this debate, we often hear that, well, it's a Second Amendment to your ability to have and own guns. What are your thoughts to the pushback from the Second Amendment or people who feel this is a violation of it? Deb?
Right, sure. Well, nobody's saying that they're going to collect your guns. Nobody's saying you can't own guns, but there are certain people who would not have guns but for a loophole in the background check, right? Buying guns illegally is another issue. The person who fired on the crowd in Las Vegas, it's my understanding that he likely bought all of his guns legally. However, this bump stock contraption that fits on the semi-automatic weapons, that should not be sold. That gave him the ability to fire more rounds and kill more people. So nobody is trying to take anyone's guns away. We just want responsible gun ownership.
All right. Thank you for that. Deb Hallin on the line with us today. Folks, where do you stand on the debate on guns, gun control, limiting regulations, limiting the number? And what about some of these things that modify guns? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Deb, we have our first caller. We're going to Doug in North Dakota. Doug, thank you for your call. You're on air. Looks like we lost Doug. Call us back, Doug. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Deb, you mentioned loopholes. Talk to me more about that. What are these loopholes and why do they exist?
Sure. Well, because they weren't written to the regulations, right? You are supposed to undergo a background check when you go to buy a new gun at a gun shop. You fill out the paperwork for a background check, and they make sure that you're able to own a gun. When you go to a gun show or when you buy a gun by some other means, the background check goes by the wayside. So those are the types of loopholes that might help folks who shouldn't have guns to be discovered, essentially.
And what about person to person? Is that also something that people are talking about? Friend to friend,
yes,
selling guns.
Right. Yes, I think it is. And of course, that when you think about all the ways that somebody can get a hold of a gun, yes, it's a huge undertaking to think about how can we deal with this situation. But I think that that's what we need to talk about. We need to have these conversations. And we need to think of every feasible instance where somebody who could get a hold of a gun that would harm people. And so I think that those are the conversations that we need to have.
All right. Thank you for that. And folks, also do want to let you know that we invited the National Rifle Association, NRA, to be on the show. We did not receive any feedback on being on. But maybe there's a representative in the audience today who would like to share. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Deb, I want to share another voice. Tom Cole is among those in Congress who feel the shooting in Las Vegas is not a cue to begin talking about restricting the public's access to guns. Cole is a Republican from Oklahoma and a member of the Chickasaw Nation. In an interview with MSNBC's Willie Geist on Sunday, Cole said the number of guns and the type of guns used by the suspect in Las Vegas are not by themselves a reason to cause alarm.
Are you alarmed at all that he had 49 weapons that we know of now, that he was able to buy that volume of that semi-automatic weaponry?
I have friends with that many weapons. That's not uncommon in my part of the country. I mean, I literally could tick off 10 names right now of people. They're collectors. They're sportsmen. This is something they do. They're not a threat to anybody. Quite the opposite. They're some of the most solid citizens in my state. So that doesn't surprise me.
So do you, Congressman, then think this is just the price of doing business then, to protect the Second Amendment?
I'm not going to be that dismissive, but yeah, I am very fierce about protecting the Second Amendment. And again, I know most of the people that own these weapons, I mean like 99.99%, aren't a threat to anybody. So to me, again, look, I'm from a state and was in public office where we lost almost three times as many people with a guy using fertilizer and a truck. So you can turn almost anything into a weapon of mass destruction if the evil intent is there to do it. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't do what we can to minimize this. We must. But I don't, again, I can't give you an easy or quick answer.
So some of your colleagues on this show yesterday on the Democratic side of the aisle said this, again, is a wake-up call that a civilian doesn't need an AR-15 or a semi-automatic rifle. I assume you'd be against banning that kind of weapon?
I would. There's millions of them in circulation. When they're used appropriately, they're not dangerous. They're obviously
they
weapons.
They have been dangerous for some kinds.
Well, so are trucks driving into crowds. But so again, I don't see that as the obvious answer, and I don't think it would change. We have 300 million guns in circulation legally now. You're going to go back and reclaim them all? I think there's not an easy legislative fix here, and I think people that suggest there is, are not very persuasive in that regard.
And again, that was Representative Tom Cole speaking to MSNBC. The video was captured by the website Raw Story. What are your thoughts? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Deb, any thoughts on what you just heard?
Sure. No, well, I agree with I agree with Mr. Cole on the fact that no, there isn't any easy legislative fix, but that's why we should talk about it. You know, every time something like this happens, you get all these defenders coming out, and I understand that there are gun collectors. I understand that there are people who really love to have guns. You know, they have they could open a museum if they wanted to, with the number of weapons they have. And he's right. Those people are not the problem. Those law-abiding citizens, those people who really are buying guns for, their value as a collector, would, are not the problem. The problem is keeping guns out of the hands of people who should not own them. And those are the things we need to talk about. And certainly, if they pass a law to ban semi-automatic rifles today, there's no way they could, collect all of those rifles that are in circulation right now. That is very true. However, that doesn't dismiss us from the obligation to work at solutions to protect citizens from these mass shootings. There's been 273, I think I read this somewhere, 273 mass shootings this year alone.
Any number, I think, is disturbing, whether it be a large one or a small one, when lives are taken in that way. And Deb, we do need to start the conversation on some of the things that you said about, gun control and this. I'm wondering, when you say gun shouldn't be in the hands of certain people, who are these certain people you're referring to? Or, start that dialogue. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, earlier I mentioned, too, that we needed to spend money. We needed to create funding for our behavioral health systems here in the United States. I definitely don't think there's enough being spent on that. We saw that here in New Mexico, not too long ago when funding was cut off from, you know, we essentially took away every single behavioral health center in the state. And that had a huge impact on people across New Mexico. And so we do need to get people the help that they need. And it seems like there are a lot of folks who are the perpetrators of these mass shootings that clearly needed some sort of help, some sort of behavioral health help. And people in their world, friends, family, perhaps they noticed something that would have been a red flag, or, you know, perhaps there could have been stops along the way for that person to get the help they needed. I don't know that, but all I'm saying is that is one piece of the puzzle that I don't want us to overlook here.
All right. Thank you for that, Deb Holland. I got callers on the line who also want to join us. Our phone lines are open, folks. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Where do you stand on gun control? Call and give us your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to take another call. We're going to hear from Dick in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Dick, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Yes, good morning. Just a couple thoughts. I grew up on a reservation in Montana. I've lived in Alaska now for almost 40 years, both in rural Alaska and now in city. And I know guns are a big part of our culture here. In fact, two Alaskans were just killed in the Vegas shooting. And two things that I want to share. One is that Chief Justice Warren Burger, who's now deceased, said that the Second Amendment that's been pushed on us now is one of the biggest fraud in constitutional history. If you go back and look at what the originalists, which the conservatives really promote today, is that we should take an original view of the Constitution, which in the Second Amendment called for a well-armed militia, not having over 300 million weapons in our country, more weapons than there are people. And secondly, this is not an easy solution. I think we live in a very violent culture from many aspects, not only just the number of weapons that we have, but how we solve those problems. It's very easy to pull out a gun, shoot somebody, shoot yourself. Our family has also suffered from suicide. So I think we have to look at the overall violent culture of our country and every aspect from our own personal behavior, our families, our communities, and start thinking about how do we treat each other. Deb, I think, has mentioned funding for mental health counseling, mental illness. It's been, you know, already promoted out there that we're going to try and redo the Affordable Care Act, where you see medical rights being taken away, funding being taken away. We have a person in the Oval Office who supports violence.
All
Our
right.
country
Dick,
needs to wake up.
Dick, I don't have the president on the line to give his thoughts on that comment, but I do appreciate you sharing. Thank you for your call there in Anchorage, Alaska. And if the president is listening, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Deb, I want to get your thoughts on that. You know, when we really take the Second Amendment, look at the entire amendment, and then we interpret it. And a lot of these amendments, you know, are left to interpretation. And do you think this in any part plays a role in the confusion or why we are where we are today with gun ownership and regulation? Any thoughts, Deb?
No, absolutely. And I agree with the caller wholeheartedly. You know, back in, you know, 1784, whenever the document was signed, they had no way of knowing that, you know, it was a different era back then. People had to protect themselves, right? Living in rural communities and there, it was just a different era. And I don't think that is a reason that gives us carte blanche to essentially kill anyone we want.
And Deb, I know you got to get going here at the break, so I did want to get your perspective as a Native American. And we also heard it from our last caller about guns being a part of our culture in our Native nations. Is there anything you'd like to say about that, whether you agree, disagree, or just any thoughts on guns being a part of Native culture?
Right. No, I totally agree. You know, I'm Pueblo, and way back when, we used bow and arrows to hunt game. I mean, that's how we sustained ourselves for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. When guns became a bit available, we started using guns. And I've been around my family all my life who have hunted and killed animals for sustenance as well as for ceremonial purposes. And I understand that. That isn't the issue, I don't think, though. And I think we can still carry on our traditional and our cultural activities without having any of these issues that we've talked about today infringing on those rights.
Yeah, and Deb, I think it's interesting as you know people report out of our Native nations, or either take a look at, well, how do Native Americans see some of this? You know, we get people talking about the past and times when Native Americans gave up their guns, and then what happened? People are associating that kind of thinking to Wounded Knee. And so there is a long history of considering some of this. And Deb, is there anything you want to share as we get ready to go to break here? And I know you got to get going. Any other thoughts you want to leave us with?
I just don't want this to go by the wayside. We have a mass shooting and we talk about it for a little while and then it goes by the wayside. I think that every single citizen in this country should be outraged at what is happening, and I encourage them to write to their senators, to write to their representatives, to make their voices heard, that we want to stop this killing. We don't want this anymore. We have our friends and family, a lot of people's friends and family were victims in that last killing in Las Vegas. And whatever it takes to stop that, we need to work to find solutions. And I don't want politics to enter into this. I don't want our elected officials to say, oh, so-and-so gave me a political donation, so I'm not going to, talk about that or work to find this particular solution. We need to put all politics aside and do the job for the people.
All right. Thank you for that. Deborah Holland, thank you for joining us today here on our program. Candidate for Congressional District 1 in New Mexico, coming to us from Laguna Pueblo. We appreciate you being on the line. And folks, all right, it's time to add your voice. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what do you think about the dialogue turning to politics when a tragedy like this happens? Any comments you have? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we're very curious, where does Native America stand on all of this? Share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls, and we look forward to your comments online, too. Zuni fetishes are carvings that represent animals and hold a special place in tradition. They are carved from a variety of materials, including marble and pipestone. On our next show, we'll talk with a few Zuni carvers about the history and practice of creating fetishes. That's on the next Native America Calling.
The 2017 AFN Convention is around the corner, October 19th to the 21st in Anchorage, Alaska. This year's theme, Strength in Unity, Leadership, Partnership, Social Justice, speaks to the Native community's recognition that strength comes through unity, and unity is achieved through sound leadership and partnerships so that social justice is achieved. You can watch the convention and Kwiana cultural performances on GCI, ARCS, and 360 North, and online at nativefederation.org. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. American Indians and Alaska Natives face a higher risk from the flu, especially those younger than 6 months and older than 65 years. For more information, ask your community health representative or community health aide and learn more at aaip.org. Thank you for keeping Indian Country healthy.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And thanks for finding us on the dial or logging into your favorite radio station. Also, hello to those of you finding us in our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And if there are topics you'd like to hear covered on our program, send us an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And earlier this month, 58 people died and close to 500 others were wounded in the mass shooting in Las Vegas. The gunman's motivations aren't yet clear. And we do know the state of Nevada does not require a permit to own most guns, and it's reported that the suspect in the case owned at least 42 guns. Some are asking if the number of guns is a factor in the attack. Others are asking if new laws would get to the heart of why and how people are able to kill and injure dozens of other people. What do you think about that? Today, we are taking a look at what those from people who are connected to our Native nations think about all of this. And we want to continue also by adding your voice to the discussion. Join us at 1-800-996-2848, or you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us here on the second half, we have from Auburn, Washington, Ann Tweedy. She is a tribal attorney for the Muckleshoot Indian Tribe, and she is an adjunct professor for University of Tulsa College of Law's online Masters of Jurisprudence program. It's our pleasure to have her here with us. Also on the line from Portland, Oregon, is John Dossett. He is the general counsel for the National Congress of American Indians. Folks, it's our pleasure to welcome you into the hour. And while we were transitioning into our second half, our phone lines really lit up. So we're going to go ahead and turn to them to hear what folks are thinking. We're going to start in Dickinson, North Dakota, with John, who is listening on KMHA. John, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hi, thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay? I'm on the middle of the boonies here, so.
You have a good connection. We like when that happens. Go ahead, John, your thoughts.
Okay. Real quick, I think this, you know, first of all, my heart goes out to those that lost their lives and loved ones down in Vegas. It's a bad deal, you know. But, you know, from a logical standpoint, you're not gonna keep the bad guys from getting their hands on guns, period. I mean, it's that simple. That's logic as far as I'm concerned. But I've been a gun owner for my whole life, and I think what's frustrating is, you know, the policymakers, the bureaucrats that are trying to stop this awful thing are making it tougher on, you know, the lawful owners like myself, you know, and the folks that want to go out and hunt and use guns as they were designed for, and it's just making it difficult on us. So, you know, there is no easy solution, but, you know, God bless the NRA. And, you know, if we can't come to some sort of agreement in a sense that will allow, you know, those that want to have guns the freedom and the right to exercise the Second Amendment, then you're going to continue to have these issues. And it's not the good guys that are causing the problems, the bad ones. You're not going to keep weapons out of their hands. So it's kind of my spin on this.
All right, John, thank you for your call there in KMHA country. Let's take another call. We're going to hear from Tony in Laguna, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Tony, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Yes, thank you for my call here. I was taught how to respect guns. I was shooting. My father took me shooting probably when I was about 8 years old, and shooting for traditional hunts and bringing food for our families. We were taught to respect the gun, you know, because that brought us our food. But you know, if you get on social media now, YouTube, you can find ways to make your rifle fully automatic as an AR-15 or a AK-47. And I think maybe politicians need to look at the social media and see about how they can block that. Because, like I said, you can easily go out, modify your rifle, make silencers, make bombs, you know, over the Internet. And you don't know who's going to get a hold of that and do with what they do, what they did in Las Vegas. But that's my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call there in Laguna. We're going to go now to Taos, New Mexico, to say hello to Mike, who is listening in New Mexico to KUNM. Mike, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Good morning. Yeah, I'd like to interject something into this discussion about gun control. And I haven't heard this brought up except once, I believe, in the last 20, 30 years. I think we need to look at if there are 300 million weapons or more floating around in the country, well, that's a pretty hard thing to control. It's already out in the system. The only thing in this situation that can be controlled, well, there are two things, really, and that's people's basic attitude about what guns are about. But the second thing is the ammunition. All the money that is made off ammunition, whether it's for sportsmen shooting guns, whether it's for collectors, whether, you know, just whatever, all the bullets that are shot, that is where the real economics of the gun industry is. Whether that would be bombs for countries we sell them to, we get a lot of money. You sell enough 22 bullets over a period of 150 years, you make a lot of money. They never discuss ammunition. When the Constitution was written, most people in the world were dealing with single-shot muskets. And that defined the law. The idea of people had a right to bear arms. That also included bows and arrows, swords, bowie knives. That was later. But the idea is that the only thing that's never discussed, and it's because of the economics, is ammunition. Now, there are tens of billions of rounds of ammunition in this country alone. I'll guarantee you, stored. I know people buy
yeah, Mike. And you know what, Mike, when we consider that, too, you know, there's even ammunition where people load their own bullets, and that isn't kept track of, too. Mike, I'm glad you entered it into the conversation. Folks, what would you like to enter? 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. We're going to take another call. We're going to go to Evelyn in Belen, New Mexico, listening on KUNM. Evelyn, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Thank you. I'm going to give a not necessarily practical comment because my basic philosophy of life is the golden rule and sort of followed up by as long as what you want to do doesn't impair what I want to do, go for it. But, you know, with guns, this has become so threatening. I have a friend who loves to hike in the mountains by herself, a woman, and she stopped doing it because too often she encountered people, groups of guys with guns on their hips. And, you know, it's just we've become a country that is so overladen with guns. Even the shooter in Las Vegas would not have been stopped through the normal means. So in a funny sort of a way, I agree with the last caller that why is it necessary for anybody to have more than one gun? And maybe we look at limiting the ammunition. That seems like that could happen and eventually would get to where we need to be. So thanks very much.
All right, Evelyn, thank you for your call. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Are you in favor of some restrictions on guns, like outlawing bump stocks? Or do you think it's a slippery slope to implement more gun owner restrictions? Call us right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's go ahead and turn it to our guests. And I just want to give you a moment. Any thoughts? We keep hearing also number of guns being an issue. What would you like to pick up on?
Well, I agree with the callers who talked about how important guns can be in Native American culture for hunting. And I think that this is anecdotal, but it does seem like you hear fewer stories of abuse of guns because of that cultural connection to guns and hunting. But at the same time, I think that personally that tribes have an interest in regulating guns, because the more guns you see in an area, violent crime has been shown to go up related to the number of guns. So I think tribes are in a difficult spot because of the jurisdictional limitations under federal law with regard to non-Indians, so that if they do want to strictly regulate guns, the most certainty of those regulations is going to be on tribal members and other Indians, and then outsiders it's less certain that those regulations will be upheld. Tribes are in kind of a double bind because of that, in thinking about gun use and gun regulation on the reservation.
And so, Anne, when we think of the Muckleshoot Reservation, what is the letter of the law when it comes to guns?
I have done some research. I'm not talking on behalf of Muckleshoot, so I'd rather talk about my research about gun regulations that tribes have enacted. So we do see rarely gun bans, and other tribes have thought, like Salt River, Pima, Maricopa, has thought about doing a gun ban, but was worried about the jurisdictional issues with all of the non-Indians coming onto the reservation that may not be subject to the gun ban. We see bans on having guns in tribal buildings, that's fairly common. Bans on carrying loaded weapons is another thing that's quite common. And some tribes do have a right to bear arms, but the tribes that I found that had that right had it more qualified than we see it, the Second Amendment being interpreted. And just to point out that the Second Amendment doesn't apply to reservations because tribes aren't subject to it. They didn't sign the Constitution, so there's a law called the Indian Civil Rights Act that applies on reservations, but it doesn't include anything like a Second Amendment. So tribes are in a unique situation where they have a lot of flexibility to regulate. But on the other hand, the jurisdictional limitations put a practical obstacle in their way.
And Anne, in some of the things that you've looked at, what about when it comes to enforcing some of the things in place? Is it an uphill battle, or what would you like to report?
Well, there isn't too much information out there on that that's readily available. There was a federal regulation modification a couple of years ago that allowed tribes to utilize the federal background check system for guns, and that had some hiccups getting implemented, so that tribes generally had to work with local police departments off the reservation to get background information. But hopefully that's going better, so that tribes do have access to this information. So sometimes there are logistical problems that get in the way of for tribes that do have background checks, like Umatilla and Grand Ronde are two tribes that have background checks.
All right. Thank you for that. Got callers on the line. We're going to weave in. And if you're finding this program in our archives, you want to add your voice, you can post directly on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And let's go ahead and go to Marsha in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Marsha, go ahead. You're on air.
Hi. Thank you for allowing us to provide some input. And I have learned so much just listening to the discussion this morning. My input, I'm a non-Native American, but we're all here together. We live and die together. And I believe there are a lot of people like myself who have never weighed in on this conversation. I am not a gun advocate. I've never owned a gun. I do understand the desires of Second Amendment advocates, you know, to have the right to bear arms. My lawyer training teaches me that. But I believe we need to know more how we can support those who work against NRA lobby. That seems to me to be the big driver of our love fest with guns in America. So I'm hoping someone can provide some information. And I heard the earlier expert talk about writing our congressional representatives. That's certainly one way. But I also know that the NRA somehow generates billions of dollars. What are some suggestions that you believe we can make to help counter their aggressive monetary support of gun advocacy?
Well, Marsha, I don't have a representative on the line. We did reach out to them, so to specifically answer on that half. But I'm going to turn to Ann. Any thoughts for our caller, Marsha?
John may have more thoughts. I think just echoing Deb's comments that writing to the legislators, finding organizations, reputable organizations that fight for gun control and contributing, volunteering with them. Those would be my main ideas about how to support those that work against the NRA lobby. And personally, I agree that it's very difficult to fight that lobby. It seems quite powerful, and that's very concerning since it seems to be a monolithic approach to just fighting gun control across the board coming from that sector.
All right. Thank you, Ann. I'm going to turn to you, John. Any thoughts?
Sure. You know, NCAI's, I work for the National Congress of American Indians, an organization of many tribal governments, and NCAI's focus has primarily been on concerns related to domestic violence. I think you probably know, under federal law, domestic violence offenders are prohibited from possessing firearms at all. And this includes people that are convicted of DV offenses in tribal courts. But the issue with tribes is, and Ann mentioned this, I think, briefly, was the access to criminal databases so that these offenses can be entered into the system so that it would show up in a background check. That's been a thing that we've been working on a great deal, but making some progress. It's called the Tribal Access Program, or TAP. The Department of Justice is working with tribes and expanding access to the criminal databases so the tribes can enter information about offenses and then also get information out of those systems. The other issue that we've been doing quite a bit is working with tribes on domestic violence and the issue of lethality assessments, where in a DV case, the tribes, tribal court systems, tribal prosecutors are more often working with the victim's advocates and doing lethality assessments of the household. And one of the biggest factor in increasing lethality is if there's a gun in the household. So I think tribes are, at least some tribes, and more are doing this, is doing work on lethality assessments in these DV cases and then using that to try to get guns out of the household and increasing safety for victims. So that's the issue that we've been working on, and there's really a lot that can be done there to expand tribal access to these criminal databases, and it does just a great deal of good in protecting victims for the future.
And John, does NCAI have a position on gun control?
No, not generally. I mean, I think you heard Tom Cole at the beginning of the show. I think he, you know, tribes are in rural areas, and you heard a lot of your callers talked about this. Hunting and guns are a big part of the culture, and so I haven't heard gun control, as it were, come up as a broad general issue. For us, it's been more focused on specific issues like domestic violence and prohibiting firearms for DV. The other issue that I think is an emerging issue is mental health in Indian country, and getting more of a focus on mental health and how that intersects with the background checks system.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's take another call. We're going to hear from Lee in Fargo, North Dakota, tuned in on KSXW. Lee, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I have not, in any of the discussions that I've heard on this subject, and this wouldn't necessarily apply to the shooting that just happened, but, you know, we are taxed on our cigarettes. Like, I just came from North Minnesota where they doubled the cost of cigarettes just by taxing it. We are taxed on, you know, our homes and have to have cars, and they follow that by the VIN numbers. And I know there's serial numbers on vehicles. And why can't you? I personally strongly believe in the Second Amendment as it relates to guns that, to me, are necessary in following the Second Amendment philosophy for self-protection and hunting. But I see absolutely no reason why a society needs semi-automatic rifles, except for the thrill of shooting, which could always be managed through gun clubs and stuff. But why couldn't we raise the tax on just semi-automatic weapons or semi-automatic ammo to such a degree that the people that want to go out and do these mass things with the semi-automatic rifles, that they are harder to get because you have to be very wealthy in order to do it.
All right, Lee, I'm going to turn it to John, who is in the Beltway and works with Congress and understands. John, is there any thoughts on when we turn to more taxes as an answer?
I certainly haven't heard that that angle on it before. Inside the Beltway, what you're hearing mostly now is discussion of some of the devices like the bump stock. There is some consideration of the devices that can turn a semi-automatic into an automatic, and whether that should be regulated. That seems like what the Washington D.C. discussion is at the moment.
All right, thank you for that. Let's take one more call. We have Laura in Corrales, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Laura, thank you for your call, and go ahead, you're on air.
Yes, this is such a, as always, a wonderful show, and I always come away with so much more information than I'd ever thought about. So thank you for doing this. The reason I'm calling is a little tangential, but not really, which is that I'm very disturbed with the fact that the media is telling a lie right now about the Vegas shooting, which is that it's the largest, I forget how they phrase it, but it's like the largest mass shooting in American history. And that is not true. Wounded Knee was the largest mass shooting in American history. And so I have been actually going and calling the media in my area and telling them, you are lying to the public right now. So Laura, I'm not telling you to bring up Wounded Knee, but get your facts straight.
Laura, what kind of response do you get?
Very defensive, but a couple of news reporters were like, I think I'm going to try rewording this. I'll start saying it's one of the largest. And I'm like, that's all I'm asking. People, you don't have to turn this into a cause, but until we acknowledge the genocidal slaughter and the occupation that is the founding of this country, we are not going to really be a great nation. And one of that is acknowledging the hideous, atrocious slaughter of innocent people at Wounded Knee.
All right. Thank you for your call, Laura. John, any thoughts on that?
I thought it was a great point. Yeah, she's exactly right. Wounded Knee was a huge massacre, and certainly the numbers were much larger. I think it was over 150 men, women, and children were slaughtered.
All right. And, John, we're getting ready to wrap up the hour. Is there anything that you think we need to be thinking about when we talk about, what has happened and making our community safer? Anything to leave us with, John?
I think at least my experience has been that working with your local, the Women's Victims Rights Association, the Violence Against Women Act organizations, they're often very involved in this. The National Indigenous Women's Resource Center has a terrific information and outreach on these types of issues, particularly as it relates to domestic violence and firearms in the home. There's a lot of good work that can be done there to protect yourself, your family, and your neighbors. And so I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thank you for that. And Tweety, anything to leave us with?
Sure. I wanted to follow up on Laura's and Lee's comments. I agree with Laura that that's a terrible omission, Wounded Knee. And also I wanted to add Sand Creek. I think we really do need to reckon with that history in order to overcome our violent past and grow as a country. And on Lee's point, there's no reason that taxes on semi-automatic weapons shouldn't go forward. I think Heller, the Supreme Court case, one of the Supreme Court cases on the Second Amendment, left the door open to gun regulations in general, so that particularly dangerous types of guns could potentially be banned. We don't know the extent of that door being left open, but there is a possibility of that, and taxes are certainly permissible under that case.
And, you know, people even have issue with the word in modern U.S. history, claiming that it pushes what happened to our native nations in the ancient past. And so, folks, that's going to do it for our hour today. Again, if you want to make comments, or maybe there's further discussions on this that you'd like to hear on our program, reach out to us. You can send us an email. comments@nativeamericacalling.com is one way. If you didn't know, we are on social media. You can find us on Facebook. You just type in Native America Calling. And you can also find us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also find this program in our archives or subscribe to one of our podcasts. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Thanks for joining us today. Also, thanks to our guests who helped share their thoughts on this conversation, too. Thanks to John Dossett, Ann Tweedy, and Deb Holland. And we also give thanks to those who called in. We are back again tomorrow with a show about Zuni fetishes. If there's something you'd like to say about that, or maybe you have a good story to share, start the conversation now on Facebook, Native America Calling. Thanks to the crew here at Native America Calling, our executive producer Art Hughes, senior producer Monica Brain, associate producer Andy Murphy, and also our engineer Marino Spencer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer Tara Gatewood. Thanks again, and we look forward to adding your voice to a discussion this week, as well as we continue to move forward in this year. Thanks again. We're back tomorrow.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com. Native America Calling is brought to you by Donlin Gold, a major broadcast sponsor of the 2016 AFN Convention in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Buju, Medicaid is all treats, no tricks. It helps kids stay healthy with free vaccinations, checkups, dental care. Visit Medicaid.gov or call 1-800-318-2596 to see if your child qualifies. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.